Episode 150.
We as humans are tribal people. We were tribes thousands of years ago. We're still tribal people, and we really care about what other people think about us. So if I'm a shop owner, I care about my family because I provide for them. I care about my customers because if I don't have them, I won't have a business and an income. And I care about my employees. More importantly, I care about what all of them think of me.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio and a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio and episode 150. Yes, another small milestone. And I'm with Murray Voth. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. Now, meet Murray Voth from Freedom Consulting and Training. Murray and I have a charged-up episode for you with the theme of change. Specifically, how do we make change and how do we implement it? Murray is all about change and ways to improve your business and yourself. He's an implementation coach. Now, I've always known that implementation of any idea or plan is the most significant way things get done. Without implementation, any great idea or plan is just dead in the water. Here's a few strong concepts that are coming your way. Why do we refer our friends to businesses we've done business with? And if car repairs were a regular bill for the customer, they would no longer think it's a grudge purchase. And who are the four stakeholders for change in your business? He also talks about how you SOAR, S-O-A-R, and also get Murray's 8 commandments of automotive service. He also says that websites are the general store of the modern era. And there's plenty more, so buckle up for Murray Voth. Here we go. Hey, it's nice to be with Murray Voth from Freedom Consulting and Training. Hey, Murray, are you ready to go on point?
I am.
Hey, I have to tell you something, man. We had the greatest call. You know, I always do a pre-call with all my guests. I learned so much from you. I can't wait to share it. Are you ready, man?
I'm so ready.
So here it is. What I left with, and it kept ringing in my head, is about what makes people want to change and why are they resistant to it. And I said, man, that's going to make a great episode. So I'm going to put my coin in and I'm going to turn it over to you. What's this change thing all about?
Well, I think human beings have been struggling with making change in their own behaviors, their own lives, and their businesses, their organizations, I think for as long as we've existed. There's all kinds of self-help books, self-help movements, gurus out there that help with that.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried some of them. I've read some of them. And as a coach, implementation coach, like we talked about in another phone call.
Yeah, I love that.
That is my fascination. Is here's a new idea, here's a new change in your business, yet you resist making the change, and how can I help you? So I have really begun to study this information and talking with my clients and working with them. And like I said too, I learn so much from the people I work with, and it helps me in my own life. And again, fundamentally, I'm looking at how to make myself better, you know, better father, better husband, better businessman.
It's so smart. It's so smart to be always wanting to learn, always wanting to improve.
Well, I love your tagline, right? Learn something new every day or something like that.
Well, listen to learn just one thing. Yes, listen to learn just one thing. Anybody who knows me knows that I always say this, be a perpetual student.
Yes, exactly. Somebody asked me the other day, and I'll get back to what I was talking about in a sec, asked me the other day, what would I do if I won the lottery? And I said, I'd go back to university.
Ah, and they said, what a great answer.
Are you crazy? And I said, nope. I said, I'm a nerd in disguise.
Great answer.
Never stop learning. So one of the things that I have studied and realized, and I have a couple of good friends who are actually academics, is we as humans are tribal people. We were tribes thousands of years ago. We're still tribal people. And we really care about what other people think about us. So if I'm a shop owner, I care about my family because I provide for them. I care about my customers because if I don't have them, I won't have a business and an income. Mm-hmm. And I care about my employees. More importantly, I care about what all of them think of me. Am I good? Am I honest? Am I fair? Am I giving them the best shake, you know, in the repair, that whole thing? So what I have found is little key things that help us realize that the change of behavior has to do with making us look good to those other people.
Oh, because we want to be liked, and it's tough to make change, and just one person in the group doesn't like it, and you feel like you weren't successful.
Right. So what's happened for centuries is we have been authoritarian, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm the head of the country. You do what I tell you, or I'll chop your head off. The more modern version, let's say 100 years old, I'm you know, in my 50s, and my dad's generation was jump, and we said, what? How high? Right?
Yeah.
So you tell a young person today who's working for you, and I know these millennials get a bad rap, but I have met a lot of great hardworking millennials.
That's right.
But you say jump, and they say, why?
Right.
And shop owners get irritated with that. Mm-hmm. And I say, guys, get over it.
Yeah.
If you can't answer the answer why, you have a problem. Because people have always wanted to know why. It's just that they got their head chopped off before they got a chance to ask it. I mean, if I go back far enough in time.
Right.
So if I could go to, I know we talked about making a change in the business, but I want to talk about making a change with our customers first of all.
Okay, great.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's
right?
Great.
And I'll go to the business, and then I go to the team. I do an exercise with my clients, my group members, about referrals, right? And so I ask somebody for a story, right? I'll say, Carm, can you tell me a story about a time you experienced good service at a business and you referred that business to other people, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll get, you know, I was at a great dentist, I was at a great hairdresser, and I always ask for non-automotive stories. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get out of our heads here. Let's get out of this context.
Yeah, yeah, smart.
So I'll get, you know, I'll get one with say, for example, is, you know, I had my deck redone this summer, and the guy did a fantastic job. And, yeah, I've already told two of my neighbors and three of my cousins,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
about this process. So there's five referrals just happened for this deck guy. So now I ask you, as my group member, I said, okay, Carm, did you make that referral to help that deck guy get rich? And the answer is usually, well, no. Right. But here's the thing. I get asked by shop owners for referral programs because they think they want to get more sales and they want to make more money, right?
But you're saying that they never earned it?
They didn't earn it.
Ah.
Because the whole thing is we want people to refer us because we want to make more money, and that we've missed the point. So then let's go back to the debt guy. So I said, so why did you refer the debt guy to your three neighbors and neighbors and your three cousins.
Right, sure.
Well, because I wanted to help my neighbors out and my cousins out because I really happy for the service and I know they need their deck done.
Yeah.
And I want to help them out. And I say, great, Carm. I said, your intentions are correct. Your conscious brain is helping your neighbors by telling them about this great deck guy. I said, but bear with me here for a sec. If that deck guy did a really good job but cursed a lot, was a really rough type of a guy, right? And you know, some construction guys, even us automotive guys, we can be pretty rough, right?
Occasionally, yes.
And one of your neighbors is a 75-year-old granny, you know, a church-going lady. She isn't going to tolerate the cussing, right? Would you refer her to this deck guy to her, even though he did a good job? And most guys would say, well, no, I wouldn't refer him. And I says, well, why not? He said, well, because I wouldn't look good.
Yeah, bad reflection on me.
On me. So fundamentally, we refer other businesses to make ourselves look good.
Right.
It's subconscious.
Not the business that you came from, but yourself.
No. Because when that neighbor says, oh, Carm, thanks for sending that guy over. He did such a good job. How do you feel? Right? You're like, oh, my chest puffs out. My head goes back. I stand up proud because my neighbor just paid me a compliment. So I tell shop owners, referrals is about making your customers look good.
Not you. Oh, wow, yeah.
That makes sense.
Very, very powerful statement and stooped in reality. And think of the challenge it takes to get everything right, or how about everything perfect?
Or if it's not perfect, how you fix it when it's not perfect.
That's right. So maybe it's more important to do a post-interview on perfection and not worry about the referral, because it'll come if it was all right.
Exactly. Right? It
wow.
will come.
Yeah.
And do you see how relational it is and how connected that is?
Yeah.
You see, because 100 years ago, where did we go first? We knew everybody in our town. We knew the good shops. We knew the good people. We knew the good barber, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, the whole bit.
Yeah.
And so referrals was all about the community, about knowing each other. Now we're separated. You know, there's millions of us in some of our cities. We're separated by distance. People ask me, Murray, you know, what's your best advice about social media? I'm like, are you kidding me? Back in the 50s, you come to a new town, you go to the barber shop to find out where the best shop to go to was, right? That's what people would do.
That's right.
I said, Facebook is a barbershop with about 15 million people in it. I said, barbershop had five guys sitting there talking, right? If you were a bad shop, you'd make a mistake. You'd only get five guys bad-mouthing you.
It's the general store of the 1800s, right? Yeah.
It is, yeah. That's all that it is. It's just electronic now, right? Anyways, let me go to – so that's the customer, right? That's what – how you get the referrals.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You know, you're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, when can you come back?
When can you come back? Or, hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Exactly. Exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop?
Is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being a next shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say a happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Good. You got me hooked. You got me hooked. Can't wait. Keep going. Yeah.
There's a second piece to the customer thing. And we talked a little bit about this, and I led into it, and I thought, you know what, why don't I do the full meal deal? So I've created something called the 8 Commandments of Automotive Service. And people have asked me, why 8? Why not 10? I said, well, 10's taken. Not touching that one.
I'm with you. Mm-hmm.
God and Moses is going to have me in trouble if I go there. Anyways, the 8 Commandments. So what are the 8 Commandments? Well, the first four are like this. In an effort, Carm, and if you don't mind me, Carm, could I just use you as my customer?
Sure.
Sure, Carm. In an effort for us to do the best service to you and keep you in control of your money with, you know, your money and your time when it comes to your car, we find out what your car needs in four ways. The first thing that we do is listen really carefully to you about your concerns for the car. How's it riding? How's it running? How do you like it? Right? We want to hear from you. You're the expert on your car. right? And of course, some customers like, what do you mean I'm an expert on my car? Well, you're the one driving it. You know when it sounds different. You know when it feels different. Do you see what I've just done? I just engaged them in the ownership of their vehicle.
Right.
Right? So, Carl, go ahead.
They possibly never thought of that like that. Oh, right. And right there, it's a surreal experience. It's like, whoa, this is really cool.
I've had advisors using this now for the last 6 months, and they're saying the customers are like quiet, or they get this smile on their face. It's like, finally, somebody's asking me how I feel. So number two, commandment number two. Commandment might not be the right term for this, but I'm working on a title.
Right.
So is number two is we're going to perform some sort of inspection on your vehicle today.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's say, for example, they're in for what a lot of people call an oil change. I don't call them oil changes. I call them maintenance services. Right.
Yeah.
So you're in for that. So that comes with a 25, 30, 40 point inspection.
Yeah.
Okay. But let's say you come into me with no cold air. Right. There's no cold air blowing my AC. The weather's hot. A lot of shops just diagnose the AC and move on. Well, what about offering that client a 15 or 20 point complimentary inspection? Right. Wipers are good. Tire pressures are good. Fuel levels are good. Fuel quality. Right. A few little things. Tell them up front. Make sure you tell them up front. There's a no obligation inspection.
But Murray, isn't that really the standard bearer in the quality shops today?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
This is not new news,
okay.
Right? So these eight commandments are not new. So just bear with me for just a moment. Number three is we are going to look up what the manufacturer recommends for your vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And number four, we're going to look in the history of your vehicle, and we're going to look for things that have been done, have not been done, and make sure that this patient chart is kept up to date based on all the first three things.
That's becoming more important than ever. That history, that the performance of maintenance and the jobs that have been done, more than, I guess, when you sit down with a doctor and he says, so you're new with me. Tell me all the stuff that's going on with you. It's important to know, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if the client is new, ask them, do you have history?
Yeah.
And they'll go, maybe. So maybe, can you bring it to me? And some of them will go, well, my shop never, ever kept that. So now I can tell you, well, you know, we keep the history of the chart on your car. Right away, you've just marketed your business to a new client in a way that they've never experienced. Now, here's the last four.
Okay, yeah.
So, Carm, we've done the four things. We've listened to you. We've inspected your car. We've gone over the manufacturer's recommendations, and we've gone through your history. So we want to prioritize what your vehicle needs so that you spend your money wisely in your car. You can budget for this and plan for this because we don't want any of this to be a surprise. That's the trouble about owning a car is the surprise bills, the surprise breakdowns, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as again, going back to two automotive guys talking, you know, this industry talks about car repairs as a grudge purchase. Well, guess what? It's a grudge purchase because it's always a surprise, or in a lot of cases. We pay all of our other bills. You know, our electrical bill comes in, our water bill comes in, our telephone bill comes in. It's not our favorite thing, but we know it's coming.
Yeah.
If we made automotive repair a regular bill, it's not a grudge purchase anymore, right? Anyway, so commandment number five is we're going to look at safety first,
okay.
Right? That's our priority.
Right.
Make sure the car is safe. Now, these next four, lots of good shops have been doing this for 30 years or longer. Number two, we want to look at what are called items on your vehicle that are serviceable. So serviceable items are things that wear out when your vehicle is part of their function. So a brake pad is serviceable, a belt is serviceable,
okay.
Shocks and struts are serviceable. These things, as part of their function, as they work, they wear out. So what we want to do is inspect those and make sure that they're wearing properly and not too soon, or that we replace them prior to them taking some other process out. Like if you leave your shocks and struts too long, you're going to bang out the rest of the front end and it's going to cost you more. Number three, we'll look at the OE recommendations, the preventative stuff, the fluid flushes, the timing belts. And then number four, what we want to do, Carm, is just ask you and also let you know about the features of your car. So are all the power windows working? Are all the power door locks working? How's the AC? How are the heated seats? Because at some point, you did like this car. You invested a lot of money in this car for all of its features. And we want to make sure that the thing – and here's the cool philosophy. We want to make this thing ride and run as close to new as possible.
Wow.
If you would like that.
Wow. I'd love that.
Okay. And I don't have time to go into it right now, Carm, but you can save people if they keep their car for 10 years instead of 5 – you can save people $100,000.
You can actually prove that to me?
I can actually prove that to you. Let me expand on that a little bit. So not in 10 years. If you take a family who replaces a car every 5 years and you use a 30-year timeline, that's 6 cars.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right. I see where you're going.
Anyways, right, if you keep 2 cars for 30 years for 15, all that depreciation runs around $100,000.
Got it.
In the 30 years, right?
Yeah.
So the whole idea would be with this 8 commandments is to keep people in the car for a long time.
Keep the car, and even though there's a cost per mile that continues to evolve, if you're staying ahead of things and not letting the big surprises hit. Well, you know, the top 5% of the shops that are out there, they get this. They know this.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So let's dive back into that whole change phenomenon.
Sure, yeah. And one thing on this, my key point too,
absolutely.
Then I'll go to the change phenomenon, is that we have been doing this and good shops have been doing this. I don't think we've been telling our customers that we do this. And I'll leave it at that. Is if you guys want a marketing tool, is tell people the 8 commandments, how we do things at our shop.
Yeah.
I think we do them. We just don't tell them that we do them. We assume that they get us.
I'm with you. It's the approach. Yeah. It's the honest communications. It's the it's developing the intimacy between the customer and the shop. Yeah. I mean, you want them to come to you for all the right reasons that you have to open your mouth and tell them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the thing we talked about yesterday about changing with our staff, with our team. All right.
Yeah.
So we sign up for a course and we go take the course and chapter one is time clock management.
Ah,
right. We got time clock and we're going to get time cards and we're going to get these lazy, slow technicians to work faster. Right. And we're going to make it better. Right. In our business and make tons of money.
That's what the textbooks say.
Right. So guess what? We read the textbook. We you know, and there's lots of I used to teach it that way. Lots of people teaching this. And so you go back to your shop and go, well, I see the math. I get it. I know how this is going to work. But I'm going to have a rebellion if I try and bring this talk system into the business. Right. So here's what I know for sure. After 30 years in this business, most technicians, and I don't know the exact percentage, but I'm going to put a high percentage over the 90s, are all about doing something faster and better. Would you agree, Carm?
Uh-huh.
You've been in this industry for a long time.
Faster and better.
They care.
Mm-hmm.
Faster and better. There's a better tool, even if they have to make their own tool.
That's right. Man, tools, training, experience,
exactly,
always.
Right?
Faster, better.
So why would I need a time card to make him work faster, better? He's already built faster, better. You know, he'd probably drag races on the weekend to go faster, right? So we bring the time card in, not to measure so much the speed of the tech, because I'm going to assume that. Now, you know, there's owners listening to this going, yeah, well, I got this one guy. Well, whatever. We can talk about that another day. Here's the thing. We have 8 hours for that guy that's there that we've paid for. Regardless of how you pay that guy, there's 8 hours that are there to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't sell it all, we can never get it back. It disappears.
Yeah.
Right?
The phenomena of time. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a parts salesman has got, 100 rotors on a shelf. If he doesn't sell 6 of them today, he can sell them tomorrow. Right? If that parts salesman's rotors began to disappear off the shelf, he'd be a lot more stressed out about how many he sold today. You know, that's my little illustration that I used for this. So the whole idea about a time card system is not to measure how the technicians are doing so much, is how is the front end, the advisors and the owners, how good are they filling the technician's time? Did they sell it for the right amount of time, right? The book time says 2.5 hours for those front struts, but it's a 7-year-old car in eastern North America with rust and stuff. You know, did we add the half hour for the additional rust and broken bolts that we're going to get into that thing, right? Technician comes out 100% efficient. Well, no, he should have been 125 because you didn't sell the extra half hour, right? But here's the thing, right? We're measuring the front, but technicians don't understand that because – when you look at the time card, it has their name on it. And because it has their name on it, they think everything on that card is their fault.
Yeah.
So what I've asked them to do is be a secretary. You know, I jokingly say, listen, what we should be doing is having somebody follow you around and punch the time clock for you, right? Recording what's happening. But we can't afford that. It doesn't make sense. So if you could just please punch the card as per how you stop and start your job and stuff like that, then we can analyze the data and find out, how good is marketing? Are we getting enough cars in? right? How that's the owner's responsibility. How's the service advisor doing with keeping you on schedule, keeping you on track, scheduling properly, getting the parts on time, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you tell these technicians that we're measuring the front, they want to use a time card in a heartbeat.
Got it.
Right.
Because they realize it is a single component of the success that's going on the front side of the business.
Right. Because most of them, if you line the cars up for them and the equipment is there, the tools are there, the parts are there, they're rocking and rolling.
So your concept is this. In order to implement change, many owners are afraid to do it, or they get some pushback and they never do.
Right.
And yeah. And basically, I think what you're saying is you want to teach owners how to make this adapt to change and embrace, and have the team be embraced in all the things that are going on that will improve the business.
Exactly.
Wow.
My short exercise that I do with people when I train them to do this with their staff is, in any change in an automotive shop, there's four stakeholders, as I call them. Mm-hmm. There's the business, the owner. Right? There's the service advisor, there's the tech, and there's the customer. These are the four stakeholders of the relationship of the day. So I do an exercise, and we don't have to do it now, but just quickly, you know. So what is the benefit of doing time card for the service advisor?
Right.
What is the benefit of doing the time card for the customer? What is the benefit of doing the time card to the business? And then what is the benefit of the time card for the technician? And as the owner and the manager and the leader, you better be able to answer the questions before you ask them of your staff.
Well, you know, that is smart, because you sure don't want to say, I'm not sure. You don't want to say that in front of your team.
One of my favorite things that I have run across was a saying that I read. You cannot plan results. You can only plan actions. And don't have the guy's name in front of me. I've Googled him, and I cannot find anything about this man mm-hmm. besides that saying.
It's a great quote.
It's a great quote. What that inspired me to do is to create a change system, if you want to call it, to help my clients make change in their business. So again, our whole topic today is this change. How do we make change? How do we implement?
Yeah, yeah.
And I call it SOAR. All right?
All right.
The whole idea of soaring, you know, soaring like an
S-O-A-R.
Eagle.
All right.
S-O-A-R, right? So S stands for what is the situation, all right? So what is the situation? And we can look at the situation somewhat without emotion. Like, just let's not blame anybody. Let's not blame ourselves. What is the situation that is happening right now? So the example that I used the other day was a shop identified that they needed a service advisor, mm-hmm. okay? Now, for three meetings in a row, they came back and they had not made that change. I developed this concept, and they were one of my first.
Where's the accountability? It's a subject for a different podcast.
Exactly.
Okay. Right?
But here's the thing about accountability is we, myself and their peers in that meeting could stare them down and say, come on, you little chickens, just hire the person and move on.
Yeah.
But what happens is then they hire in a rush, they make mistakes, things like that. So the situation is, we need a service advisor. What is the outcome? So O is, what is the outcome? Again, just dream. What is the outcome that you're looking for? Well, I'm looking for a female advisor with 5 years experience, right? And this is what I'm looking for. That would be the ideal outcome.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Now, what are the actions that are going to lead to that? Well, the first thing that you need to do is write, and I take this from Michael Gerber. It's called a positional contract.
Okay.
What does that job look like? Right? It's not just the job description, but what does this service advisor do? What are they responsible for? Okay. So write that up.
Yeah.
Okay. That's action number one.
Yeah.
Action number two is to create an ad that reflects that positional contract, right? Advertisement for the position, what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I know there's laws about, you know, male gender hiring. So you have to put it as a broad, mm-hmm. broad strokes advertisement. But so then you create the advertisement. Third action plan is to identify the places where you're going to advertise. The fourth action plan is to actually advertise. The fifth is to actually interview.
Yeah.
The sixth is to actually then go through the hiring process. So I then broke the action plan for the shop. By the next meeting, you have to have the positional contract written and your ad written.
Let me stop you for a minute. I love what you just said. You said by the next meeting. So basically what you're saying is there is a time the timestamp on this. It's due by, and there must be someone responsible to get that done.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah, good. Okay.
And you've said it well, because it's who and the time, which thank you for that, right?
Yeah.
Who and the time.
Yeah.
So then they came back with that done. The second meeting, they had placed the advertisement. They hadn't had as many responses as they wanted, so they asked the group, what are some other places to advertise?
Okay.
They got some feedback and they got some support. By the third meeting, they were already interviewing people. In a three-month span, they hired the advisor, and it was the advisor that worked out very well for their business. So people talk about breaking things down into steps. That's fine, but we have to understand that it's the steps themselves make the change, but we have to understand that what is the situation, what is the outcome, what is the action, and R stands for what are the results.
And the results, or the I think you would call them expectations. In the case of the service writer, would I say the results would be that I want to hire someone and I want them to be gainfully employed for a long time? And
yes.
if that's the case, you're going to make a much more quality hire if you start, begin with the end in mind.
Yes, exactly.
You're not hiring a position. You're hiring a team member. You're hiring someone in the culture, someone of the cloth that's going to realize the growth we're expecting in our business, share that vision.
But we need to have the position written out clearly so that we then hire exactly what you said, right? We hire the culture, right? Because too many people hire a person without being clear about the position. So, you and I get along great. We go fishing together and stuff like that. But I suck at answering the phone.
Listen, Murray, you're just going to have to come back, because I didn't cover anything. You covered it all. I love what you said, but I got a million other things on my agenda that I have to ask you. And would you come back?
I would love to.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun.
Because you're not the first person that has told me that I say too much.
I did not say that. No.
No, I know.
Come on, Murray. It was great. So,
all right.
Let's wrap it up. Murray Voth, Freedom Consulting and Training. Murray, give us some great words to live by.
Take responsibility for yourself, but don't be hard on yourself. I see that as a difference.
Uh-huh.
There's too much blame in the world. So when something goes wrong, look at how you can fix it rather than blaming yourself. You know, and you might blame yourself initially.
Yeah.
Let that go.
Okay.
Let it go and look for what is the situation. Take the emotion out of it. What is the situation?
But if you blame yourself and you take it in a little bit, does that harden you? Does that give you the stamina to go out and do round two, maybe fix it, make a change?
Depends on your personality, Carm.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's a lot of work. There's a lot of reading and work on that one. Yeah. Sorry, Matt.
I wasn't coming up with a fix-all statement, but you're right.
No.
It depends on the individual, but it depends on what's in their heart and their soul, how quickly they'll recover from something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is what other people have said, and maybe they've said it better, is don't be a victim. When something happens to you, when you're having a challenge, because this is why people listen to this stuff, right? They want to do better. They want to learn something.
That's
they want
right.
some help.
That's right.
So at the end of the day, let's be truthful here. We have struggles in our lives. So the whole thing is don't be a victim. Take a look at it, and this is the part that you said, right? Intestinal fortitude, don't be a victim, take responsibility, and then figure out. Here's my closing words. Figure out what taking responsibility means for you. How's that?
Perfect. Thanks for being on.
All right.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks so much for joining us. Now, for an in-depth episode experience, don't miss the show notes for this episode with Murray Voth at remarkableresults.biz/E150. It's so easy to find any show notes just at the E and then the episode number at the end of our URL. Hey, any questions, comments, ideas, or subjects you want discussed, or even guests that should be on the show, email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz or head over to the contact page on the website. Your help is needed to share the wisdom and grow this very important industry resource, and you are an important reason I bring you these interviews so you can profit from the answers found in each episode. And I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.